Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of how the reckless and suicidal brinkmanship in Washington looks to a group of the world's leading economists meeting in the nation's capital. Economist Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University, joins us to offer her perspective on government by extortion and the new head of the Fed, Janet Yellen. Then we will speak with another female economist about the new chairwoman of the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, the first woman to hold what is considered the second most powerful position in the world. Pavlina Chernova, a professor of economics at Bard College who served as the Associate Director for Economic Analysis at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability, joins us to discuss the good news at the Fed and the continuing bad news from the Capitol, where the Republicans are offering a truce until November the 22nd before they resume their threat to default. Then finally, we will speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and columnist for the Los Angeles Times, Michael Hiltzik, about the letter from the billionaire Koch brothers to U.S. senators where they distance themselves from the current activities of the Tea Party, apparently alarmed at the prospect of the grave damage the actions of the congressional caucus they have supported could do to the economy and to their $70 billion fortune. We'll examine the role of money behind the shutdown and whether money from the business community might now flow to moderate Republicans instead of Tea Party extremists. And joining us now is economist Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephanie Griffith-Jones.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Ian.
So, Stephanie, you're in Washington at a conference on the International Macroeconomic Cooperation, where a focus on Europe, et cetera, and the global economy. And surely, and I know you were there with Nobel laureate Joe Stiglitz, who I spoke with yesterday. I imagine a lot of the conversation is about what's happening in Washington, where you are.
It wasn't the aim of our meeting, but obviously we did discuss that. And we are really quite surprised because, you know, the U.S. is always lecturing other countries about having good governance. And now we have a minority group within a minority party in one of the branches of Congress creating problems which are very bad for the U.S. economy and the U.S. people, which also threaten potentially the rest of the world economy. It's quite appalling, really.
And does anybody encouraged in the slightest by the latest offer by the Republican hostage takers that they will not hold the full faith and credit of the United States hostage? They'll delay that for a while, but still they want to shut down the government over Obamacare. So they're offering a few weeks reprieve till almost up till Thanksgiving, and then they'll start all over again. And of course, we don't know whether or not the president will accept this offer. He's indicated that he's interested, but we don't know whether he'll accept it. This is just a pattern of government by extortion, I imagine. Is it? Nobody's thinking that that's a resolution of the situation, are they?
Well, exactly. I mean, it is encouraging that there are negotiations because it's completely unacceptable and dangerous for the U.S. to reach the moment of default. But it doesn't make sense that a law that has been already passed doesn't get funded. So, and also this kind of short leash approach where every couple of months or every month you would have this minority group in the minority party trying to impose different conditions is really very unacceptable. So I think it's a very difficult situation in the sense that these people don't seem to get it, don't seem to understand what the stakes are, and at the same time, the issues are so important.
Well, it's pretty hard to believe that there hasn't been more pressure from Wall Street on the Republican Party. Apparently, it's starting to happen. Most of the Wall Street professionals didn't believe this was possible and that this would happen, but we're certainly not out of the woods. And the economic illiteracy of those people who are holding a gun to the government's head, are a lot of them are saying that the debt ceiling or crashing the economy or failing to pay our debts won't be a big deal as an international
economy. Which is completely absurd. I mean, I think the term used, economic illiterate, is very scary to have people in such important positions like members of Congress who don't understand basic economics. I mean, after all, last time that this kind of antics went on, the U.S. got downgraded by one of the rating agencies. And as regards Wall Street, it has this type of behavior in which it sort of is optimistic, and then suddenly it will change. But the problem is that once it changes, once you get into these kind of negative, vicious circles, it can become very damaging. So it's in a way good that they haven't yet panicked, but they could panic for any reason. And this is precisely what the politicians and the Republicans, particularly the Tea Party, have to understand, that they are bringing upon themselves a very, very large risk. I mean, I've just been to Africa, so many countries have real problems. This is a completely self-inflicted problem, which is, you know, unacceptable. And I think the American people should be all writing to their congressmen and explaining the economics, because I think the average American understands much more economics than many congressmen.
Again, I'm speaking with economist Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. And she's in Washington, D.C. at an International Macroeconomic Cooperation Conference, along with Nobel economist Joseph Stiglitz and others, ostensibly there to talk about the global economy and where Europe stands. But this has to be very much dominating the discussion, simply because the U.S. economy, one of the reasons why this is such a suicidal move on the part of this minority of Republicans is that the United States enjoys enormous advantages for being, in effect, the international currency and being the best place on the globe to put your money. I guess it's kind of incomprehensible that people would want to, you know, tarnish that reputation where...
Exactly.
You know, I mean, are you all scratching your heads?
Well, it's very hard because, as you say, it's a major asset in financial markets that you have the most liquid financial market in the world is a market in treasury bills. It's supposed to be the safest asset. And the rest of the world is willing to finance the U.S. deficit and the U.S. fiscal deficit and the U.S. current account deficit. But we've seen that countries like China and Japan are increasingly worried about these antics, and they cannot understand them. Why would you want to undermine faith in your own economy at a time when you actually need the resources? And at a time when the latest projections from the U.S. government show that the problems of debt sustainability in the long term are actually not that serious. I mean, obviously you need a process of medium-term fiscal consolidation, but the situation is for the next 70 years, the latest projections that I saw from the Council of Economic Advisers are actually quite good. So there is no need to create crisis. And what we know from crises in developing countries, that if you have problems, if, for example, the spreads were to go up on U.S. treasuries, you then create a problem, which is much bigger than anyone that you potentially have at the moment, because treasury bills would become more expensive and the U.S. government would have to serve more payments on its debt. And your mortgages would become more expensive and credit for small and medium enterprises would become more expensive. So the U.S. economy would be harmed. And when you should be so happy that you're finally getting, you know, a recovery. It's not big enough, but we look at this with envy because your recovery is much better than the European one. And because you've had a stimulus package, you've had actions from the Fed, and so you should be looking at how to deepen it, how to promote it, how to benefit the majority of Americans. And instead of that, it's just incredible, as you say, this kind of suicidal undermining of your own economy. I mean, most politicians try and benefit their countries and their economies, and this is completely unprecedented.
So, Stephanie Griffith-Jones, my understanding is that already there's a slowdown in buying T-bills and that the interest rates are likely to go up. So even the threat of these actions of defaulting on the debt, even though now the Republicans are offering another stopgap interregnum before they start it all over again, we're already paying a greater price. And again, in terms of economic illiteracy, I don't understand how they can continue to stick to this argument that they're really doing this because they're concerned about the deficits, when last time around, the credit ratings went down, so that means the debt's more expensive. This time, they're messing with the T-bill market, and it's likely to make our cost of borrowing already more expensive, which then adds...
So it's already having effects, as you say, on the cost of government borrowing, the treasury bills, and it will probably, or what has already happened, slow down the economy. And what markets and economists look at is the ratio between debt to GDP. And so if GDP grows a bit less, your ratio of debt to GDP will go up more, and this will make it even more difficult to borrow and could make it even more expensive in the future. So this is, you know, lousy politics, bad arithmetic, and terrible economics. So it's really completely unacceptable.
Well,
but it's good news that there may be at least some breathing space. I mean, it's not enough because you won't have a solution, but it's... But I think we've had some really encouraging news in the last few days in the sense that Janet Yellen has been appointed also to the Fed, has been appointed, and that is fantastic.
Well, let's talk a little about that. Stephanie Griffith-Jones, again, currently the Financial Markets Program Director, Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University, and the author of Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. My understanding is that already on the Fed, in terms of the votes, that Janet Yellen has shown that she's actually a little more concerned about Main Street and less concerned about Wall Street, as her predecessors have been, particularly with the quantitative easing, the $85 billion a month of buying bonds that arguably, by trickle-down, it does help Main Street, but it really helps Wall Street more. And my understanding is that she and others in the minority on the Fed are actually interested in more of trying to stimulate Main Street and less subsidizing Wall Street, and particularly interested in more in community banking and how to help people, consumers and average citizens who are underwater with their mortgages. Is that what you hear and that what you understand from her record?
Well, I think there are two things that are very positive about her. One is her deep understanding of monetary policy and credit policy. And as you say, one of the challenges is, I think there are two challenges of monetary policy. One, within the United States, to try and channel, as you say, money to the real economy, to SMEs, for example, through community banking or through small banks or through special programs that can be encouraged by the Fed and by other parts of the government to directly channel money. And secondly is how to manage the tapering, which is very complicated. And I think on that she will also do it in a way that is more careful, both of employment targets, because the Fed has both the, as you know, inflation target and employment target. And also one important thing that one would hope she would look at, which is the impact on emerging economies. Because in the same way that quantitative easing encouraged a flow of money to the emerging markets and appreciated their exchange rates and caused bubbles there, a rapid outflow, if tapering were to be introduced too abruptly, could lead to major reversals and major exchange rate depreciation, major collapses of house prices. So it all has to be done very gradually and with deep understanding of how markets will react. And the fact that she has so much experience at the Fed and the fact that she has taken very moderate policies on monetary issues, I think is very encouraging. And the second issue, I think, where she's very, very good is in her deep understanding on the need to regulate financial markets, because I don't think that Dodd-Frank fully did the job. And above all, it's been so much eroded by the banking lobbies. So it's been so weakened. And it is so important that we do not have another financial crisis, because we know how damaging it is and how expensive it is. And I think she will have, I know some of her professors, including Joe Stiglitz, Jane DeRista, and others, and she has, and from her record, she also has a very deep understanding of financial regulation, which is a very difficult area, but she's somebody who is progressive on this issue, but also has a very in-depth understanding of the needs of regulation. So I think she, both in the macroeconomic policy, I mean the monetary policy in particular, and on the financial regulation, which are really the two main functions of the Fed, I think she can give excellent leadership. And so that, I think, is a good sign. And if there weren't these antics, I think this would have increased probably confidence in the United States and in growth. So that is, but once this problem is solved with the budget and the debt ceiling, I think she will be a fantastic leader.
So Stephanie Griffith-Jones, you're saying that she'll be less concerned about inflation and more concerned about unemployment?
I think she might, on balance, be because. I think that Bernanke has been concerned about unemployment, and this is also one of the strengths of the American system, in the sense that the U.S. Fed has as a target, unlike, say, the European Central Bank, you have as a target lowering unemployment. But then, of course, it's all how much you relatively privilege that objective versus the objective of lowering inflation. And I think that she will be an ardent supporter of also having these real economy targets. And
well,
not for example, increasing interest rates or tapering too soon. But of course, having to take care of the fact that, you know, there is a lot of liquidity at the moment, and there is a potential problem for the future. Not so much of inflation of goods, as is traditionally the case, but of asset price inflation. Bubbles in the stock market, in the housing market, which is the new challenge, which lead then to the problems of financial stability.
Well, just in closing, do you think that there's a possibility of Wall Street and the CEOs? We've already had the Koch brothers who have been fairly vilified, and I'm among those who vilify them, I think, justifiably, for their support of the Tea Party, but they've even backed away from what the Tea Party are up to now. The Chamber of Commerce have made some mutterings. Do you think there's a possibility that there's going to be sufficient pressure? Obviously, the Republicans have contempt for the president, so they're not listening to him. But at the end of the day, do you think they're going to listen to Wall Street and stop this nonsense and this dangerous and reckless insanity?
I think they need to listen to Wall Street. They need to listen to the CEOs of the big companies. They need to listen to the small and medium companies. I mean, after all these people vote for them. They need to listen to the unions. And they are all saying the same thing. Business, whether it's Wall Street or Main Street, whether it's CEOs or workers are all saying a message for you know, please come out with a solution quickly so we are stopping to do this suicidal damage to ourselves. So I think at some point They do need to start listening. I understand that they are in very safe seats and that the people who vote for them seem to not care about any issues. But in the end, democracy surely must work, and they must listen to the forces, the live forces of the economy.
Well, Stephanie Griffin-Jones, I thank you so much for joining us.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with economist Stephanie Griffin-Jones, who's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis, and she is in Washington, D.C. at an international macroeconomic cooperation conference with a number of leading world economists. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking further about Janet Yellen, the new head of the Fed.